Bigger doesn't have to mean impersonal. I'm Matthew Ehrenreich, your local Edward Jones financial advisor. Nearly 7 million investors work with Edward Jones, but how do I measure success? It's my personal relationship with you and how well I understand your individual financial needs. Experience the difference for yourself. Contact me today at 314-965-0374.
Why don't you call in, big man?
That's 314-965-0374. Or stop by my office in Watson Plaza across from Crestwood Bowl. You'll see that personal perspective is how Edward Jones makes sense of investing. Edward Jones, member SIPC.
Welcome back to the Ryan Kelly Morning After. Now, back to Tim, Jim, and Doug, live from the Gateway Buick GMC Studios on the all-new 590 The Fan, 105.7 HD2 FM, and InsideSTL.com.
Hi-hat
with a souped-up tempo.
Nice.
I'm on a roll. It's time to go solo. Rolling at that point. Think about it.
It's Ryan Kelly Morning After. It's the all-new 590 The Fan KFNS. We're also on 105.7 HD2. That's where I listen to the station, although the 590 The Fan signal is much better than what we were on. So that's good.
I've heard that loud and clear all over town.
Yeah, people have been saying that. Yeah. People have been emailing me that and saying, good job. I'm like, I didn't have anything to do with it. Credit the engineers. Credit
I thought you got in there with a tool belt and a wrench.
A tool belt for daddy?
Tool belt yeah. for daddy.
Nice, Charlie. Tool belt Charlie and a
wrench and tighten some stuff up.
Tim, having gone to Missouri and knowing how anti-St. Louis the Kansas City kids are, would you now become a Chiefs fan? All the Kansas City kids are making a huge deal about us picking them as our new team, but you just know they wouldn't do the same if the roles were reversed. They rooted against the Blues just to be anti-St. Louis this past playoff season. Thoughts. That comes from the blonde Asian beta. Huh. A lot going on there, Doug.
The bab.
Blonde Asian beta.
I am not a fan of any NFL team minus the one playing the Rams, and that's good enough for me because I find myself more emotionally invested in that than I have been in the Rams for a few years. If people want to be Chiefs fans or Bears fans or Colts fans or Broncos fans or Packers fans, Godspeed. Doesn't affect me. And I don't know. I can't speak to the climate in Columbia, Missouri right now. But you know who can? And you know who can also present the Kansas City side of things? Ladies and gentlemen, from PowerMizzou.com, presented as our Bud Light guest of the day, the Colonel Gabriel P. DeArmond. Morning, Colonel.
Hi, guys. How are you?
Did you hear that text from the blonde Asian beta?
I did. I don't know who these Kansas City kids are. I don't know the Kansas City kids that he knows. I can only say for myself, I could not tell you who the Blues or anyone else played in the NHL playoffs, and could not really tell you who has won the Stanley Cup for like the last, 40 years.
Wow, shot at 99% of America.
It hasn't been the Blues.
Okay. Yeah, I have zero interest, and I have zero interest in telling anyone what NFL team they should root for.
I happened to be down in Columbia the night the Blues played the Blackhawks. I think it was game two, the first round, and I was stunned by how many Blackhawks jerseys there were.
There's a lot of Chicago people.
And that's what I heard. That's what I heard, because initially I'm like, God, is this Kansas City thing really going to that level where now they're wearing Blackhawks jerseys just to taunt Blues fans? But in reality, I found out that like going to Missouri now is kind of the thing for many Chicagoans.
Right.
Who knew?
Yeah, outside of the state of Missouri, I think it's easily the largest alumni base and the largest like student population is Chicago.
Was that like that when we were there 20 years ago, Colonel? I don't remember that.
I don't know. I knew a few Chicago people. I don't know if it was that big. I think people underrate this, but the 2007-2008 football seasons so greatly increased Missouri's national visibility. I think probably that they have a lot more out-of-state people that were interested. I think we knew a lot of out-of-state people because of the journalism school tends to draw a lot of out-of-state people. But Melissa Catone was a Chicagoan.
Doug, did you know that?
Tim. No, sir, I really didn't.
Yeah,
I was trying to figure out where she was from.
If you guys, if Tim and I could just do a podcast about the people we knew in J school.
We
I think
should, and some of whom we slept with. Tim?
Did you sleep with someone in the J school?
Well, the colonel did.
You and the colonel slept together. The
colonel probably doesn't want to be doing this actually right now because he's like a married father and I'm just a pervert.
Guys,
so
I gotta go.
Yeah, he's leaving.
There's another guest from Kansas City. We ran off before we got to the meat of the interview. Gabe DeArmond with us.
Go Blackhawks.
Gabe DeArmond with us here. Brought to you by Bud Light. PowerMizzou.com is where you can find the colonel. And colonel, I have been looking forward to this conversation, kind of in a masochistic way, ever since things concluded Saturday night in Columbia. And I read some from PowerMizzou.com, which I would recommend wholeheartedly to our audience. You're not going to find much better Missouri coverage anywhere else. And you said this, and I said, coming from Gabe, this is powerful, because not only are you around the program on a daily basis and have been, with the exception for a couple of years in what, the late 90s, early 2000s, but you've been a lifelong Missouri fan, and your dad covered Missouri for the Kansas City Star. So you would be well-versed in this. And in this, you said Saturday night's loss was one of the most painful you can remember. And considering you're a Missouri fan, that's really saying something. That's like a Cubs fan saying that they this is one of the worst ones they can remember.
I mean, the fifth down clearly was worse. The kicked ball maybe might have been worse. But other than that, I mean, people have brought up like Syracuse in 2012. That was Syracuse.
Yeah,
it
was
the difference.
And it was an irrelevant game.
Five and seven and
yeah,
six and
I
like
that.
You know, people have brought up South Carolina in 2013. But the argument I make against that one is that didn't hurt Missouri. Still at the end of the year, they won the East, were playing for an SEC title and a spot in the national championship game. Like, yeah, it really hurt at the time. But in the end, that didn't really do any damage to Missouri. And I don't know if this one will either. I mean, this one might be the difference between like 8-4 and 7-5, or 7-5 and 6-6. So, grand scale, maybe it's not significant. But that was a game I looked at. I was talking to the guy next to me in the press box in the middle of the third quarter, and I said, "Does it not seem like Missouri should be up 3 touchdowns in this game?" I mean, they were playing so much better than Georgia. They clearly they won that game for like 58 and a half minutes. I mean, they absolutely gave that game away. And Georgia deserves credit for taking it. Don't get me wrong. But they, I'm still stunned that they managed to lose that game.
You in the moment, you and Doug, in the moment, on Twitter, both were saying that if Missouri does not win this game, Barry Odom and Josh Heupel are going to have a lot of questions to answer. Doug has already conveyed his reasoning for being furious during the game. This was before Georgia had converted the 4th and 10 for the touchdown and the Jamon Moore fumble. And I believe you were probably on the same page, although I don't know exactly what it was. But Doug was furious about the offense still snapping the ball with plenty of time on the clock. Where were you and why were you saying they'd have a lot of questions to answer?
During that drive, Missouri got the ball with about 13 and a half minutes left, and they ran a 15-play drive, the one that ended with the Drew Lock interception in the end zone. The first 14 plays were running plays. They were consistently snapping the ball with 20 seconds on the play clock. So if you take those 14 plays where the clock never stopped other than to set the chains on a first down, if you take those 14 plays, if you run the play clock down to 5 seconds on every one, let's say that's an average of 15 seconds a play, 14 plays of 15 seconds, you're talking more than 3 minutes of game clock that Missouri simply didn't use. So rather than getting the ball with 3:32, and I understand, look, maybe it doesn't all go the same. Maybe things change and all that. But just using the math, Georgia got the ball back with 3:32 to play on its own 20. If you had wasted 3 more minutes, that game is over. You know, I thought, and then the second problem was, first of all, they shouldn't have thrown the pass to the end zone on that Locke was intercepted on. I understand throwing the ball there, but if you're going to throw the ball, you throw a screen pass or a bubble screen, something like that, that can't get intercepted. I mean, that's the only thing you can't do, because then you trot Tucker McCann out, who actually looked like a competent D1 kicker on Saturday, and you take a 2-score lead. But then, given a reprieve, They get the ball back. They get to the 40-yard line on 3rd and 11. They approached that third down play as if there was a minute left and Georgia had one timeout. There was 3:30 left and Georgia had two timeouts. Running into the middle on that play does absolutely nothing. What they did was they made the clock a non-factor in the game. I mean, 3.5 minutes with a timeout, that's not enough to score once in college football. That's enough to score twice, which is proven by the fact that Missouri got the ball back and would have had time to go down and kick a game-winning field goal. I thought they were aggressive when they should have been conservative, and they were conservative when they should have been aggressive. And I am not a play-calling, blame-the-coaching-staff guy, but more, and there are other plays that could have changed it, but more than anything else, the coaching lost that game in the last 12 minutes.
Gabe, I was going to kind of ask you that, but you just answered it. But on the Drew Lock interception, my question was going to be, do you think, I mean, should that be an option for him? We were talking earlier about how,
No. Obviously,
when you have pass plays, you have different options that you can throw to. You go through your progression, and you do have a young quarterback. So how much do you blame Locke versus the coaching staff for allowing him to be in that situation? But you kind of already answered
right.
that. So you're saying,
well,
go ahead.
I mean, Locke threw the pass. So, yeah, he deserves blame. And also, let's credit the Georgia defender for making an unbelievable play. I mean, to make that catch and get a foot down in the end zone, which he clearly did, it's a great play. So he deserves credit for that. But to me, if you're going to throw, and again, I probably wouldn't have, but that's easy to say in hindsight. So if you're going to throw, you run a pass where it is, look, the ball is out in a half second. There is no think about it. If your first option isn't open, you take three steps out of the pocket and sail that thing 40 yards out of bounds. I didn't like the call. I didn't like the execution. Again, you've got a kid who's already thrown two interceptions in the second half on very similar plays. I think if you're going to be discouraged, and I would not be discouraged about Missouri's quarterback play. I would actually be very encouraged after that game. But if you're going to be discouraged, the thing you're discouraged about is he threw three interceptions, and they looked virtually identical.
Yeah, with all the football I've watched, I don't think I've ever seen a situation where a team up by six with 4 or 5 minutes left is still running a hurry-up offense and not taking time off the clock. I can only imagine the Georgia coaches looking at each other laughing and say, are they really doing this? Are they really going to give us the ball back?
The drive with 4 or 5 minutes, they were better. They were running the play clock down to like 8 or 10. So that was better. The one I had a problem with, again, was the one that went from 13 minutes to 7.5 minutes and should have taken an extra 3 minutes off the clock. But I remember, guys, having this discussion with people when Chase Daniel and Dave Christensen were here. They're great at going fast, but when they need to, can they go slow? And that team actually did show an ability to, when they got the ball back with 4.5 minutes left, just grind the thing out. And, you know, that's the other problem. Missouri's running game wasn't good. It averaged 3 yards a carry. So the bigger problem than getting in 3rd and 11 and running the ball then was that you got to 3rd and 11 because you weren't capable of running the ball. You know, so does this team have that? Okay, Gary Pinkel always called it the 4-minute offense where you get it back and basically it's a – I said it at the beginning of Missouri's drive with 13.5 minutes left. I said, does Missouri have that – soul-crushing drive in it, where it just grinds its way down the field and takes 7 minutes off the clock. And they did for a while, and then they threw an interception.
Gabe DeArmond's our guest, brought to you by Bud Light. Colonel, what was it like post-game? Let's start with Barry Odom.
I tell you what, guys, I thought, and you guys will, I think, be able to identify with this a little bit from having seen Dick Vermeil in person. He was so emotionally into that and so emotionally drained. It actually occurred to me walking out of there, he's got to find a way to process this. Not better, that's not the right word, because you can't tell somebody how to handle something. But if it takes that kind of emotional toll, I mean, you worry about a guy, just burning out. Yeah, I mean, he was fighting back tears in the press conference, and I think that's great. Don't get me wrong; I'm not insulting that, not saying anything negative about him. But when that is your job and you are in these meat grinders every week, I do think that you have to find some compartment to be able to kind of put that away, because the emotional toll that it takes on you can be really difficult. You know, clearly Barry Odom really cares and delivered the right message. He is, I think Missouri fans found out after that game, he is going to be positive to a fault. I've seen it with Ned Yost the last few years. Fans get so angry with Ned Yost. He never says anything bad about a guy. Well, it works. I mean, the guys believe in him. They want to go play for him because they know he's got their back in public. And I think Barry Odom's got some of that in.
Gabe DeArmond's our guest here on the Appliance Discounter phone lines. There was a video shot, and I saw that it was on the PowerMizzou.com board as well. It was tweeted out, I think, by Missouri Sports Net. I want to properly...
Bill Pollack, yeah, okay. Missouri Net Radio.
Okay, attribute it, and I retweeted it. It definitely got a lot of attention for those who haven't seen it. It's Barry Odom running off the field. I don't know the Odom family. I know you do, Gabe. I don't know how well you know them, but at least I think you would recognize his wife. I would imagine that was his wife that he was running past.
Yes.
Okay, so he runs past his wife, who I guess was trying to comfort him as he ran off the field. And he has at least one son there, I would imagine. Is that correct as well?
He has two sons.
Okay,
yeah, so I don't know if they were both in the video or not.
And
yeah.
So Odom runs past his wife. She tries to grab him, and then he turns around, regretting that he ran past, and then went back and hugged her. And then his son is there, and he is emotional following the whole thing. And that was a heartbreaking video to see. You don't usually see things like that, especially rarely do you have a coach who's only 39 coaching in a game of that level.
Right.
And then to see a young family and how much that had to hurt them and hurt him captured on video. I suppose it's a commentary, A, on how young he is, relatively speaking, to other coaches in a prominent program in the SEC, and then B, how much it wears on him and his family.
I mean, this is a very tough job for a coach's family. I know I have heard from members of coaches' families before, like, my kids don't like going to school after a loss. My kids have heard some just foul things about their dad, whether it's a head coach, an offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator, whatever it is. It's the ugly side of it. You know, that video in particular, a lot of people on our site took exception. I didn't even see it till last night. A lot of people took exception. This shouldn't be out there. This is somebody. I didn't think the thing made Barry Odom look bad. I mean, you know, I didn't see any issue with that. I thought it actually made him look pretty good. And B, you know, the point I brought up on our board, how many of the same people upset that this video's out there because his son was upset last when CBS showed the kid in the stands crying after Kansas lost in the NCAA tournament. Mm-hmm. I bet a lot of them laughed because that wasn't their team. You know, so I don't know. I didn't really, like I said, I didn't even see this video till last night. I don't think it's all that big a deal. You know, I know Barry. I know his wife, Tia. I've spoken to Tia more times than I ever spoke to any wife of any other coach. I mean, she does. When she is around at a media event, she will certainly go out of her way and say hi to the people she knows in the media, which I appreciate. It makes her a little bit more, it's a little bit more of a human interaction. But, you know, I don't think this video is anything big. It was kind of a personal moment that was captured on video. And I suppose if Barry and Tia don't want things like that to be captured on video, then they won't do it on the field again.
Yeah.
I suppose if there's a silver lining to be found after such a horrendous season last year, at least the stadium was filled up. They played Georgia tight.
It was not even close.
It was 59,000.
It was pretty. There was only some open seats at the upper corner.
57,000. I mean, it was a bad crowd.
There was 14,000 empty seats in that stadium. It was the lowest attended SEC game ever at Missouri.
Well, then I guess I didn't see where I was. I saw some on the other side, on the west side. I saw some at the very corners. I was so high I couldn't see all on the east side, but I thought the crowd was okay. And coming off that horrendous season that they had, to at least be competitive against a ranked team, at least it gives you hope that this is not going to be one of those, 3-9 seasons. At least some hope that Missouri football's back.
Yeah, I do agree. There are a lot of reasons to be encouraged about that game. No question. I said after that game, my prediction is, look, after watching that game, Missouri's going to a bowl this year. Now, it's not going to be the Sugar Bowl, but, you know, they're going to go to a bowl game. They're going to win 6-7, probably not 8 at this point. If they would have won that, maybe 8. But I think I picked them 7-5 before. I picked them to start 1-2. I think they're still going 7-5. They're going to beat somebody they shouldn't beat. They're a better team in week 3 than they were in week 2, better team in week 2 than they were in week 1. All those things are very good, and none of them take away the pain of you should have won that game.
Yeah, but as long as you can throw the ball a little bit, and it does look, Drew Lock looked like a future NFL guy in the first half anyway, as long as you can throw the ball a little, you got a shot.
Yeah, we no longer are going to go to games, and when the other team gets to 14 points, say, well, this is over. That's encouraging. They are competent on both sides of the football, and credit to Josh Heupel for that. I know I was hard on him for the play calling in the fourth quarter, but look, he's clearly doing a better job with most of the same guys than the offensive staff did last year, so he deserves a lot of credit. There's a lot of things to like about that game. I agree, no question. You feel good. Fans don't like to hear moral victories, and it's not a moral victory. You should have won that game, but there are definitely things to like.
Hey, Colonel, you mentioned Jamon Moore, and he has been the centerpiece of targeting of criticism from Missouri fans, in part because of play, but then also in part because of his role in the hunger strike protest last year. And he was having a hell of a football game, and he almost broke free for what would have been one of the more memorable plays in Missouri football history, had he been able to do so on what wound up being the final play of note Saturday night. And you said he stood and talked it over with reporters on Saturday. And you, as you said, say what you will about Jamon Moore, but a lot of people wouldn't have done that. Give us some perspective there that we didn't get a chance to see.
Well, and look, I've been somewhat hard on Jamon. He's never quite lived up to the potential in his first 3 years, and he was involved in the issues from last fall. He was certainly not the only one. He was certainly not the only leader, but his name has been attached to it probably more than others, and fans, I think, hold that against him. I have immense respect for Jamon for showing up and answering the questions. He clearly didn't want to do it. It was hard. And fans think a lot of times that us in the media want to, kind of gotcha questions and put these kids in bad situations. Listen, that's no more fun of an interview for us to do than it is for Jamon to do. We don't enjoy that. But we're doing a job, and I had a lot of respect for Jamon showing up and doing it, because there were other players on the team who didn't. There are other players who consistently dodge the media. I mean, there are guys who have been All-Americans who we barely talk to in a season. So I respect Jamon for showing up. And you guys know from dealing with Cardinals, Blues, Rams, there are professional athletes who wouldn't show up and do that after they fumbled on the final play of the game. And I am of the belief in no way should Jamon Moore be in the top, 15 of people you blame for that loss. I mean, he had 8 catches for 196 yards and 2 touchdowns. Nobody else on Missouri had more than 3 for 44. And there's a great picture out there. I think it's from the Post-Dispatch of Barry Odom hugging Jamon on the sideline. And I actually talked to somebody who was down on the sideline yesterday, and they told me that what they heard Barry say to Jamon was, "You made this night happen." You know, in other words, we're not here without what you did for 58 minutes. So don't let that play overshadow it. But like Drew Lock said, there's only so much his teammates and coaches can do. Jamon's got to get over that. He called it the toughest loss of his life, but he's got to get past that and come back. And, you know, whether it's this week against Delaware State or at LSU or whatever, this kid's their number one receiver. I don't care if you like it or not, he is. So he's got to get past that and bounce back, and I think he will.
You think they can handle that ornery bunch from Delaware State?
Nice.
Oh, Lord. You know, Delaware State, I found out last night, lost to Monmouth.
They did.
I did not actually.
And Monmouth is ranked 18th.
A football team. I knew they played basketball. This is going to be a dreadful, boring 3.5, 4.5, 5, however long these games last now, hours.
Georgia gets Ole Miss this weekend. Mississippi's a 7.5 point favorite on that. LSU and Auburn. LSU is on the plains. Doug, you like that on the plains?
I don't really like that much, no.
And then Missouri heads to LSU. Well, I guess we'll find out here not even a week, probably in about 4 hours, I guess, what time Missouri and LSU will be.
Yeah, right? And if you're a Missouri fan, start rooting for noon.
Yeah.
You don't want – listen, I don't think – that's the least winnable game on the schedule and has been all year. I'm not saying it's impossible, but it's very, very difficult. But it gets even more difficult if you let the LSU fans sit around and drink all day.
Yeah. Hale State gave them a little scare on Saturday. That was surprising.
Yeah, I saw none of that. I saw none of almost any games, to be quite honest, on Saturday. Yeah.
Well, since we've broken down and asked a lot, we've tiptoed around the real question, how much do you think yellow uniforms hurt the Tigers on Saturday?
I mean, you got to burn them, right?
I would think so. Probably a touchdown difference.
Hot take, Bill.
Yep.
If they had had black pants, Arian Penton knocks that pass down.
Yep. That's what I was thinking. Gold is the color, not so much yellow.
Okay.
Gold is the school color.
Clearly an issue.
Yep. Thank you, Colonel.
Doug, I'm surprised you stuck around for the game after seeing those outfits.
Well, it was hard. It was hard to do, but I did. You know, I had the ticket, so I thought I might as well stay.
Enjoying it with
your
three sons.
Doug. You're one of the good ones.
I know.
You're one of the good ones.
You said a mouthful there.
Thank you, Colonel.
See you guys.
All right, thank you,
Thanks.
Gabe.
Gabriel P., DeArm, University of Missouri Journalism School, 98.
Mm-hmm. 1998, Doug.
Heck of a year.
Who's the blockhead who schedules Delaware State? I mean, really, how many schools do you go through when you're making a schedule 4 or 5 years ago before you come to, I know, let's play the Delaware State Hornets?
Let me ask you this, though.
Whose idea is that?
Let me ask you this. If at the end of the year, Missouri ends up 6-6 and gets to a bowl game, it may be because of Delaware State.
Well, instead of Delaware State, play Missouri State. Play SEMO. Give some state school the payday. What do you want? Need to give the payday to Delaware State
Missouri,
for?
Now, usually I am 100% on board with the criticism of the Missouri football schedule and then the patrol running around saying, well, we go to bowls around here. That's what we do. Well, you get 4 wins in September because you schedule no one. That's what you really do.
Mm-hmm.
But Missouri now went to Morgantown to start their season and then has to play in the SEC where they're traveling to Gainesville, traveling to Knoxville, hosting Georgia, traveling to Baton Rouge. I don't fault them for the schedule.
I don't fault them for scheduling a cupcake. It's the cupcake that they pick. Keep the money in Missouri. Why do you want to give the money to Delaware State?
They are
State?
Playing Missouri State next year.
Good. That's better. They should play them this year. Or SEMO.
But don't, would you
don't
care
call
more?
Some Delaware State out of the pull that out of the basket and bring them in here?
I agree with you. I don't think they're in a basket, but.
Basket of deplorables.
Basket of deplorables. What do you have against Delaware? Hey,
what do you have against
state.
Missouri?
We're in Delaware.
Why don't you play SEMO, Missouri State? That would make
I
at
agree
least that would
with
make
you.
Some sense.
I agree with you. My point is, I don't think it makes it any more compelling of a game. If you're going to beat each team 63-7, do you really care if it's SEMO versus the Delaware State Fighting? What's their nickname, by the way?
Hornets.
Missouri.
Are they really
good football teams? Those college teams are good.
Yeah.
Huh?
Well,
what are you going to do this year? I think pretty good stuff.
Well,
huh?
Probably not much. Not much.
That's what he's talking about. He's talking about SEMO.
Yep.
Talking about Missouri State. He's talking about Fontbon, Webster.
I don't.
Lindenwood.
Yes, you got to have a couple blood donors, but it only makes sense to keep the money in the state. Other state schools. Don't give it to Delaware. Doesn't make any sense. You think SEMO or Missouri State wouldn't jump at the chance to play Missouri every year? Of course they would.
Doug Tease Farm and Greenhouses is the official shrub sponsor of the Ryan Kelly Morning After. Right now, trees and shrubs, yes, that's right, I said shrubs, will be 20% off at the St. Charles location when customers mention they heard about us on 590 The Fan. The all-new 590 The Fan. Just a tip from the pros, fall is the best time to plant trees and shrubs. More rapid and successful growth come spring, but they have much more than that. They have homegrown produce and the best selection of plants and flowers. You can also get your local Missouri honey at Tease Farms. Tease Farm and Greenhouses with 3 locations at North Hanley, Maryland Heights, and St. Charles. The Cat's going to join us coming up at 9 o'clock. Doug, that is his Cardinal report, and that'll be from Colorado where the Cardinals play the Rockies for 3. I always dread those games. It's just not my style of baseball. It's just all over the damn
You would think
place.
The Cardinals would be well-suited for that
yes,
park.
Yes, you would. I agree with you. I agree with
their
time
softball
on that.
Players hitting fly balls all over everywhere. You'd think that'd be perfect.
I agree with
they
you.
They should be tied with the Giants tonight. The Giants have got to face Clayton Kershaw in L.A. The Cardinals have got Carlos Martinez going. They should win this game in Colorado. The Giants should lose, and it should be tied.
I agree with you, sir. I saw the same thing and thought the same thing. I agree. I don't know how low Smart pitches in Denver.
Well, you just assume have him as anybody, except for Reyes, who's their best pitcher, I think.
But I'm glad we kept him down in the minors as long as we did.
Yep.
Nobody was saying bring him up, a month before.
No, as they blew game after game in the bullpen there before he got here.
He really has struggled. It's stunted his growth.
Mm-hmm.
I'm worried about his future. I'll tell you what.
Texts in 855-CUB-TALK. That's 855-CUB-TALK. Program it in your phone. 855-CUB-TALK. And you can get involved in the radio part. The Cubs have lost, three in a row or two in a row? But lost 3 of 4 to the Brewers, if I'm not mistaken. This is a weird spot, man, and teams can have this happen to them. And maybe it'll benefit the Cardinals. I don't know.
You would hope.
Outlier because the Nationals have nothing to play for. Unless the Giants make a run against the Dodgers, and as you made reference to tonight, the Dodgers have Kershaw going. I would imagine the Giants have Bumgarner, though, since the Cardinals dodged him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Cardinals got very fortunate there. Yeah. It seems like they have dodged so many times the big boys on the other staffs this year. Fine by me. If it gets them into that play-in game, God bless America. But, they dodged Bumgarner, and now the Giants will throw him against Kershaw tonight. So one of them will not be getting a win, no matter what. And Kershaw will try and get on track for the playoffs. But they know what they're doing, and they're playing the Nationals. So how will these two teams that already know that they are in handle the final few weeks? Because so far, the Cubs, since clinching, have not done much of anything. And, Joe Maddon fielded, the C team a couple of games. But he also had put the big boys in yesterday. And they weren't able to do much, and we saw it happen to the Cardinals before. I'd be curious, and I don't know if anybody would have the numbers, but what a team performs like in October when they clinch with more than, I don't know, what arbitrary number to set, but more than 15 games remaining, and how they wind up playing in the month of October since the advent of the wild card era. I'd be curious on that. I don't recall many teams just in general that have the overwhelming best record in the game winning the World Series. But I know around here it has been a bad beat in the past when the Cardinals have had these monster win totals and then all of a sudden just fell flat in a series. And we saw it happen in 04. We saw it happen in 09 is the one that really stands out to me. Who do you think is going to be the sixth seed in the East of the upcoming NCAA tour to beat, Doug? Thanks.
How about we let the season play out? How about we have a first practice before we do that? Before we put
but just like
that
your,
together.
But your bracketology, what do you have?
Yeah, I have got nobody in the bracketology. I'm not going to set a bracket 7 months before the tour to be. I'm just not going to do it. I'm not that sort of guy.
When you take a look at the sixth seed, though, keep your eye on Rick Pitino in Louisville.
Okay.
Yeah, Big Al.
Oh, hello, Al.
Hey, boys, how are you?
Oh, we're fine. You?
Hey, Timmy, I got you another sponsor coming.
What do you have?
St. Louis Custom Gear, Randy. He does embroideries down in South County, down by Hooters. I went down there Saturday morning. He got my jersey I sent in to you. Had Chase Daniels' old jersey. Actually, it was Smith's old jersey. And had Beagle put on it. And Lives Matter MU, and I proudly walked around Saturday with that baby on and watched the Tigers lose by a whisker. Isn't that a shame? That's what happens when you mess with dogs.
It's a lot of things to put on a jersey.
And knocked the ball out, and they couldn't. The old J-mon couldn't see him coming because he got his eyes poked out like my Beagles did. Mm. How about them Tigers? Poor Barry. I know you're upset, but guess what? That's what happens. Karma's a dog.
You're upset because the Mizzou Medical School is experimenting with the eyes of beagles? Is that correct?
Experimenting's not the thing, Doug.
What?
They experimented and blinded them, and my organization was ready to adopt them, and they euthanized them.
Oh, Lord.
So I used to be a season ticket holder.
Yeah.
Now I'm not. So wait for the boys from Delaware to come across that river and come through the woods and scalp them Tigers and skin them alive.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
But really sorry that...
you think it could have been an accident? Could it have been just a medical accident or something?
No, it was purposely done. Read it. It's an RFT. My organization knows all about it. We subpoenaed all the records from Mizzou. And they got beagles up there right now in cages testing on them and killing them. So have at it. But it's kind of karma that a dog came back and interrupted their little tiger party. So too bad, so sad. And I will have my jersey on Thursday when you guys come out. So just wanted to say, and by the way, I will be getting a hold of the head of the Pro Football Hall of Fame today to remind him that Orlando Pace and Marshall Faulk are St. Louis Rams. And if you're going to do that, sir, then take all your history out of Canton, sir, and why don't you call the Rams, the Cleveland Rams, just like where they came from. You act like nothing happened here in St. Louis. We won a Super Bowl. Wait till this team's in there about a year scoring 0 points in two games and all the stars are somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
Then they'll see what they got. So,
what did you think of that quote from Roger Goodell this weekend where he's talking about Oakland possibly moving to Las Vegas, and Goodell was quoted as saying words to the effect of, no city should ever suffer through losing a team once, much less twice.
When Roger's lips move, he's lying. And you know what? He can kiss my you-know-what.
Hey.
I wish the Rams would have lost, but hey, I was so happy that the Tigers lost that I was kind of happy anyway. So that's what happens, Mizzou. M-U-F-U-M-U.
Hey, come on.
Eagle Lives Matter.
And you got Beagles written across your Mizzou jersey.
Too late, Doug.
Oh, he hung up. All right.
Tribute to Pickle Patrol. Yeah, the quote you're making reference to, Doug, just to really ignore that phone call, was Roger Goodell telling Brian Murphy, and I don't know who Brian Murphy works for.
Murph.
Doug, do you know who Brian Murphy works for? He's a sports columnist for the St. Paul Pioneer Press. So I suppose this was, Goodell was in Minneapolis, St. Paul last night for the opening of the new Viking Stadium. And Roger Goodell said on the Raiders leaving Oakland again, quote, no market should lose their team once, let alone twice. I believe there is a solution in Oakland.
Mm-hmm.
He has wonderful self-awareness.
Yeah, doesn't he, though? Like, this guy will never spread this if I say it. It'll just appear in this one little community newspaper. No one else will hear it.
Then when asked about St. Louis, because I imagine somebody was standing there going, well, that happened in St. Louis. And he said, well, you feel for St. Louis Rams fans. That's difficult. That's why we work so hard for solutions to keep the teams where they are.
Oh, how does he even say it? How does the words even come out of his mouth? And all the while, he's making $50 million a year or so. It's just enough to make you throw up, isn't it?
It's unreal. The lack of self-awareness and like the blatant lying is phenomenal.
If he'd just come out and be honest, the whole country would say, well, I get it. If he'd just come out and say, L.A. is a much bigger market. That's where the Rams have been. St. Louis has struggled to support the team. We're just going to go back to the second market because we think it's better for the franchise in the league. You might not like it here, but at least you could say, okay, at least he's not lying to me.
But could they legally do that?
I think they could do whatever they want to do.
No, but I think they had to at least pretend like they were following the guidelines.
According to whose guidelines? It's their own guidelines.
I understand that.
So
and I'm not
no
a lawyer,
thing,
but I'm
there's
saying...
There's no legal thing involved.
But I'm saying there are guidelines, there were guidelines in place that they at least had to make appearances with the window dressing of the town halls and all that to pretend like any of that mattered.
But who are they answering to? They're answering to themselves with these guidelines.
I don't know, but the guidelines are in place. And I do think at least nationally, from a national perspective, it would look much worse if they said things like that. Because it would be just ripping the hearts out of St. Louis where... Although we know the truth, nationally, I think people still think baseball town, nobody showed up. They can slide by on that.
When you watched that game yesterday with 90,000 fans there, I'm sure you thought, well, yeah, this makes sense. Why didn't they do that 10 years ago?
But it's also the first game.
Absolutely.
I think everybody knows it's the first game back in LA in 20 years. People are excited. If they're 4-12 next year for game five, there's going to be 52,000 people there.
I hope, because certainly the team is about as boring an NFL product as you could possibly put on the field.
No, I agree. And I saw a lot of people on social media saying, yeah, they still haven't scored a touchdown. And I get it. They are very boring. You have Case Keenum out there. They did win the game, though. So, and they may have had help, but they did beat the Seahawks. Seahawks are a pretty good team. So,
Seahawks haven't looked like much so far, by the way.
No, I know. I still think the Seahawks will be a playoff
team. You would assume so. I agree. But they have not looked good at all. They really haven't. The Rams have 9 points in 8 quarters of football. So, Doug, I got that at 1.1.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Quarter.
Should have drafted a quarterback.
Team looks super good just because they have so many damn options. The Arizona Cardinals.
Yeah.
My God.
Snootful there.
Jeez. What are you going to stop? David Johnson's sweet. Then good luck on stopping the four wide receivers Carson Palmer will throw to.
Well, they've stopped John Brown. I drafted him. They've certainly stopped him. He doesn't get the ball. He doesn't get any looks at all.
Drop him, baby. Drop him.
How'd you do in fantasy this past week?
I lost due to a computer glitch.
Who are you playing?
I don't even look. Charlie, I worry about my team. I don't worry about the other guy. I do what I do. It doesn't matter what the other guy. I have no idea who I played.
Well, you played me and I beat
you.
Oh,
I did?
And Tim beat me in baseball, so I was 1-for-1. One and one, I should say.
You're down to the championship round in baseball now?
Yep. I'm playing for third place. Tim's in the ship.
Against who? Non-gay?
The nonling.
Hmm. This nonling.
It's an awkward conversation because I respect Charlie and I like Charlie a lot, and we both want to win. And candidly, Charlie's team at this point in the year is better than mine. I kind of did it with smoke and mirrors this week.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah.
And my offense this week, not good.
And the non-gays got a good team, and I don't consider. I thought I could have lost to the Plowhawk 2 weeks ago, much less Charlie this week. So I'm. This is all gravy for me. Seaman had a great regular season, but the Seaman are no longer what the Seaman once were, Doug. Got a nice football team, though, I'll tell you that. Holy moly, cockatoli.
Do you?
Mm-hmm.
Who'd you beat this
week?
Seaman
put up 169 points.
Yeah. Producer Joe, unless Producer Joe gets 50 points from Jordan Matthews tonight.
Well, he won't get that many.
You don't know that.
Well, I do.
Tim, I got hard this weekend and banged my wife. Thanks, it's Timmy the Tickler. I wonder if he'll be in attendance at TMA Live at Hot Shots in St. Charles.
God, I hope not. I hope not.
Who would you rather see, Swope, Tony Doe, or Timmy the Tickler?
Swope and Tony Doe don't bother me much. Tickler just goes out of his way to try to be vile.
Now, Tony Doe was grabbing at you under the table while you were doing the show, and you say that doesn't...
Well, he didn't really reach me. He tried, but he stayed at arm's length.
Tony Doe, though, he did try to put a chicken wing in his mouth and then lean over and try to have one of us bite the other end of the real meaty portion of the drumstick.
Right, but we didn't do it. We didn't do it, though, did we?
I wanted to.
Guys, I've got my Southside Seaman fantasy football tickets available. Thanks from the 314. I think I might make a Southside Seaman jersey and see if we could sell those.
Don't you think...
Oh, I'm sure you could, Tim.
Don't you think PPR fantasy leagues are more fun?
Yes.
I agree.
And if you don't recognize the difference between a PPR and the, quote, standard fantasy football league when drafting, you are going to be doomed. You have to be cognizant 100% of that. It's so important.
Mm-hmm.
That's why Doug has Matt Forte. That guy's a PPR monster. You thought maybe he was going to have a lesser year. What did he put up, 30 points for you on Thursday night?
Yeah. I scored a lot of points. Just somehow you managed to hack into the computer system and give your guys more points for the same thing my guys had been doing.
You know what it came down to? It came down to Sunday Night Football and my underperforming running back, Eddie Lacy, versus Doug's, what, number one, number two pick, Jordy Nelson.
Yep. He had a couple chances for late touchdowns there.
Yeah. Didn't happen, though.
Yeah, the NFL's rigged. I understand that.
The Prime Minister's fall to 1-1.
I understand it.
While the deplorable baskets... Improved to 2-0 on the Young campaign.
I feel like you name your team as trying to irritate Doug.
I do.
Because your baseball team was the liberal bias, was it not?
Well, here's what happened. What was my baseball team? It was Club Flip all year long. But then because I got so sick of reading Doug's Facebook and Twitter posts complaining of the liberal bias, that when I was facing
you shouldn't
him
get
that
sick
week,
of that. It should be education.
I changed my name to Liberal Bias just to annoy him. Yeah. But then I beat him, so I said I might as well keep it that way. But yes, deplorable baskets. I may change it after I'm
and
no longer facing
you're okay
Doug.
With that description of people.
No, I just think it's funny.
Yeah.
Clearly, she felt some ramifications from that comment.
Yeah, you would think. But you decided to take that as your team name.
Yeah, to make fun of you.
Mm-hmm.
I'll do anything to make fun of you.
Mm-hmm.
Guys, my wife cut my hair to look like Mike Bush's, and then she banged me. Thanks, that's from Colorado.
Mike Bush has
Colorado.
Nice hair.
Yes, he does.
Great
God.
Hair. Looks like a Ken doll sometimes.
I am
hair.
Telling you.
Perfect.
It's
perfectly,
thick.
Perfectly
it's,
coiffed.
I mean, that is nice hair. It really
thick,
is.
It's a thick head of hair is what it is. You know.
I'm as jealous as the day is long.
Yeah, me too.
Hey, I made reference to Buck Swope's program. And man, podcasting that program, it just puts me in a happy place. Buck Swope does wonderful work. You can download, just subscribe to it on iTunes. And there you go. You got it. But you can listen to it on InsideSTL.com. And of course, Doug, if you want to gather the family around, it airs on Saturday nights at midnight here on the all-new 590 The Fan. This most recent edition of Swope's Picks was wonderful because it looked into one of my all-time favorite shows, Morning Grind, Morning After, 12 years of award-winning radio. in which we had Caden Cross, friend of the show, in on a Friday for Foot Fetish Friday. So it was me, Doug, and Jennings. And we had women come in, including a mother of three who left her children in the minivan while she came in to participate in Foot Fetish Friday. And then we had a paralegal come in, and you thought that might be grounds for a harassment case.
Seemed as though it could be.
Right.
Yeah.
But what we didn't know at the time is the following. Janie the lesbian was trying to get to the Webster Grove studios, and we would have met Janie the lesbian. But here's another element of this. Here's another part of this. Janie the lesbian at the time was not an out lesbian and was currently,
She hadn't been turned.
She hadn't been turned. You're exactly right. Mm. She was either with a gentleman, living with him, or engaged to him. And she felt like, had she gone in for the Caden Crush Foot Fetish Friday, she probably would have made out with Caden and then gone full-on lesbian. So not only would we have expedited Janie the lesbian's lesbianism, but we would have met Janie the lesbian earlier. And I guess the way you sum it up is by saying it would have been a whole thing. So here is Buck Swope talking over from Swope's Picks.
Can't wait.
With Janie the lesbian.
All right, hit the lever, Plowsy.
Do you ever think like, could I have possibly made it work?
I missed a huge opportunity. Like, it's not like I beat myself up every day about it, but definitely I could have skipped that meeting and gone and made it work. In hindsight, I think that it was probably something that I should have done. I should have just left work. It was a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, and somehow I didn't take advantage of it. There's so many reasons why I didn't. But now thinking about it, I should have just put all caution to the wind and gone and done it.
I mean, but then you wonder where would that have led? I mean, would you have become a part of the show?
It would have led to lesbianism a lot faster.
Things would have gone. I mean, would you say it would have accelerated the end of your relationship with your boyfriend at the time?
I would venture to guess that would be.
Like by the end of the weekend, you know, one of you guys would be moving out.
It's a nice bit of journalism he's doing there on a big, important story that affects so many.
I mean, the show is unreal, and it sounds like they're wrapping up, and I'm driving, I'm looking at the podcast on my car as I'm driving, and I'm like, oh my God, he still has 7.5 minutes. What the hell is he going to talk about more? And sure enough, Swope finds a way to fill it. You know how he finds a way to fill it?
Talking.
He wraps up. No. He wraps up with Janie the lesbian, and then he goes into this, his Swope's Pick drop montage. Doug, take a...
Oh, great. All right, hit the lever, Plowsy.
The old master painter. The old master painter. The old master painter.
Brian's Paint. Brian's Paint, with 12 years of experience, can handle all of your painting needs.
My stepdad and I used to paint each other's chest.
It's nice if they match the carpet.
The old master painter.
Brian's Paint. Brian's Paint. Brian's Paint. Custom painting, murals, and faux finishing, plus deck refinishing and power washing.
There will be some black, gold, and white involved.
White.
Maybe some yellow and some anthracite.
Are you serious?
The anthracite. The anthracite. The anthracite.
The old master painter.
Brian's Paint. Brian's Paint.
We match our paint colors exactly.
Green. Green. What about baby blue?
Ooh. Victory blue. Ooh.
It was pink. Pink. Pink.
Ooh.
The old master painter.
Brian's Paint. Brian's Paint. Having an art degree.
Nice humble brag.
Brian is able to offer color assistance and bring you the highest quality work.
The old master painter.
Brian's Paint. Professional, clean, and affordable. Brian offers free estimates and is full. Fully licensed and insured.
The old master painter from the faraway hill. La 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 la.
It's Brian's Paint, online at brianspaint.com. Support the sponsors.
Swope here, reminding you that all episodes of Swope's Picks are available for download at insidestl.com. You can also find Swope's Picks on iTunes in the comedy section under S for Swope.
Tom from Salt and Smoke. Brisket. Tom from Salt and Smoke.
I wish he'd bring some brisket in every now and then.
Brisket, brisket, brisket.
I can come bring it to you next.
Thanks to Tom for doing that. He's a great man.
Tom from Salt and Smoke. Like, he can come in and do our jobs better than we can do it, but if we went and cooked brisket, I'm not sure we'd be able to really do it.
Brisket, Doug. Yeah. Bring us to you.
And pulled pork as well.
Yeah. You know, there's a theory that all the smoke in the air kind of asphyxiates everybody, so you're only kind of
Michael Hutchins, Doug.
Jim the Cat Hayes.
having action with Doug Vaughn.
Doug.
It's basically just drinking and hanging out.
Doug, I mean, look at what is happening here.
Oh, yeah, it's kind of like a commune. Take what you need, leave what you have.
I like that. Oh, yeah. Doug, I like that. It could be all creepy. Everybody's drunk, and God only knows what happens.
Oh, my goodness. Tony the Plowdow, what is he doing?
And that was the Eiffel Tower MMF.
I don't know. We don't really look at stuff. It's not actually a business.
Man, this Bringus, I like that Bringus, I'm telling you.
Now you have a friend in the brisket business.
Tom from Salt and Smoke. Brisket.
Once again, I'd like to thank Brian's Paint and Salt and Smoke. Support the sponsors that support Swope. Special thanks to Janie the Lesbian for joining the presentation.
Oh, get on with it, muff.
Get on with it, motherfucker.
Oh, get on with it, muff.
You've been listening to Swope's Picks. Enjoy the mashup.
Wow.
It's kind of exhausting. How long does it take to edit all that? You got to go actually, back and find the stuff?
I mean, there's 2.5 more minutes left after that, so I didn't know how far you went.
Just straight drops?
I don't know what it all entails, but I think the first 2.5, you kind of get where you're going with it.
The reason why the show amuses the hell out of me is how serious he is when he does the interviews with people.
Like, this is really newsworthy stuff.
It's like watching Frost Nixon.
Why doesn't he tackle an important issue?
Well, he just emailed me, and he was thanking me for the kind words on the air. But if I didn't think it, I wouldn't say it. Trust me on that, man. But I guess this week's episode is, like I said, the 2011 Cardinal season, and of course culminating with the Freeze home run in Game 6, but as through the eyes of show archives from 2011. And even though this show really is a hand job factory, is what it is, our show the morning after, it's such a coincidence, Game 6 was outstanding because it led into Game 7 that night. It was a Friday morning, and Joe Buck was on the show about 7 hours after he had the call of Freeze's home run. Ozzie Smith was on the show. And he said the Rangers are done. They don't have a chance, which is, you just don't hear people say things like that. Like people on Twitter say that and then delete it after they're wrong. But you don't really have people, you know, Hall of Famers saying things like that. But then you look back on it and you go, yeah, Ozzie Smith probably knew because he remembered after the Don Dinkinger thing, they didn't have a chance in Game 7 against the Royals in 85. So if anybody would know, it would be Ozzie Smith. So anyway, that was a very good show. Talks about the Rasmus trade. I guess there were a number of injuries early on the season, Holiday, and then as the team surged through September. So it's all the audio archives, and then I guess he is interviewing me about it for this Saturday's episode. I need to record the interview of episode 3 by Wednesday because I need to have the finished episode to the Sea Monster by Thursday morning. Yeah, well, I'm happy to do whatever. I love that Swope's Picks, Doug. I'm telling you.
Yeah, sounds like you do. I just wonder how he finds all the drops or 3-hour shows going back years and years. You got to listen to all the shows to find just the 2 seconds that somebody said something.
And let me tell you something.
What?
Okay, that Caden Cross foot fetish Friday gets a lot more erotic than I remember. Oh God! And you know who was enjoying themselves in the studio that day?
Jay Randolph.
Yes, he was.
Yeah.
Yes, he was.
I bet.
Yes, he was.
Well, the whole thing is centered around him. That's
mild,
what it's for.
The mild appreciation.
It's almost not even worth bringing up, Chuck.
There was a time during the program, and you can hear it on Swope's Picks, that Jay and Cade and I had forgot it in this, just start watching some of her scenes together while we're doing the show.
Is that right?
Yeah. And that was the time where I believe you decided to list your top 5 quarterbacks.
I wanted out. I wanted out of the conversation. I wanted out of the studio. I wanted out of the business.
Who's your top 5, by the way?
Like Elway when it was all said and done.
I believe so, yeah. I like Elway about as much as anybody. Yeah, I liked Elway.
There was a discussion with you and the non-gay who was shooting video of the event on Glenn Hall.
Yeah, Mr. Goalie. He's my number one netminder.
I like cookies.
Okay. It's kind of an easy discussion you can have with yourself when things start to go poorly in the studio in another direction. If you'd like to distance yourself from a particular conversation, you break right into top 5 quarterbacks and you can come up with something pretty quick.
It's a good point, though. Like, how do you rate Johnny Unitas? I mean, his numbers aren't as great because it wasn't such a passing
game. No, they are, right? Yeah.
Who's this Doug and why can't he hear me?
Well, because I had audio problems.
Now, the end of that drop, It was cut off right as Tim started to explode into laughter. That should be included. The laughter portion should be included. There we go.
There it was. Okay. I couldn't hear her. I couldn't hear much of what she said.
I took
and
a
I wasn't
picture
missing
of
much
you.
Either, by the way.
No, I took a picture of you during that interview.
Did you?
And you were kind of doubled over. You kind of looked like the thinker.
Yes,
you
did.
You had your hand on your forehead like
Rodin's
thinker. Where in my life did I take the wrong path to get to this particular moment?
Oh, shucks.
You know, I have that thought often.
Nice plow, Rocky. Yeah, I was texting with Caden on Friday night about that interview. And Amory goes, who are you texting with? And I said, oh, Caden. And he goes, what are you guys talking about? And I said, the Keisha Gray interview. And she goes, you know, you're really lucky you have a wife this cool to put up with you.
I would say,
texting a porn star about your interview with a porn star.
Mm-hmm.
As you get ready to go to Las Vegas and talk about this lesbian orgy you continue to talk about.
She's just given up, hasn't she?
She is a pretty cool broad. But then I said I would never be married to somebody who wouldn't put up with it.
Yeah.
You know, so it kind of cuts both ways. And I said, you're very lucky to be with somebody who looks like me.
Well,
it's a good point.
No, I highly enjoy the penis.
Ah, now, who is that?
That was Sassy Cassie.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Her spot played during Mike Matheny's broadcast in 2011, and it led to a whole thing with him and the non-gay.
Led to him getting out of the business and right on into managing.
Right. Then he went to the NLCS 4 years in a row.
Mm-hmm.
3 years in a row? Nurse? No, you get the idea. Hey, the Cat's going to be with us to talk about Mike Matheny and the Cardinals in Colorado. And the weekend that was a season-saving weekend in San Francisco. That's next on the Ryan Kelly Morning After.